what do you, so, okay, this is really going to make some people mad. Just going to throw it out there. So what do you, or how do you feel about school districts that promote administrative staff to positions like director of safety and security? How do you feel about that?
Obviously, being an employer, you definitely want to promote with it,
yeah,
whenever possible, right? And I would say that that is probably one of the most challenging things for any organization, and a school is no different, right? Because there are, no matter what the situation are, you may have people on your team that are phenomenal at their job, and they have come in every day and they've just knocked it out of the park for you. And so when there becomes an opportunity for some type of new role or some type of new position, you want to reward those people who have put in the work for you, who have been the team player. That's what you want to do. But as a responsible leader of your organization, you have to look at what is the duties of this role, how does it affect my organization, and what's the right person for the job that's going to take you to where you need to go, right? And that's a hard thing to do. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, we've seen, whether you call it the good old boy network or some type of thing where this position comes available and then someone gets the job because they've been there a long time, right? Not necessarily because they were the most qualified candidate. In some cases, it may just be laziness that somebody's, you know, said, hey, we have to have this position. Mm-hmm. Let's put somebody in there. It might be a salary thing, right? So when all the candidates who have the right credentials come across, they all want X amount of money, but they could take somebody else who's been here for longer and make it a lateral move or move them over, and they don't have to pay them
well.
But the decision to hire somebody should be based off of
qualifications. I mean, right. I get wanting to be loyal and promote from within, but at the end of the day, we're talking about life safety of people, man. You know, and do I think that there's some educational staff that could do a pretty good job? And do I think that there's some benefits of promoting within from within the educational ranks? I absolutely do, because, you know, those individuals know the culture, they know the climate, they know the people, they speak the educational language. Whereas, you know, that was one of my biggest hurdles and obstacles. And I will tell anybody that's in my shoes, that's coming from a law enforcement or proactive security background, if you think that you're going to just jump head over heels into K-12 and start making a difference by causing waves, you're wrong.
Yep.
You're going to lose that battle. Right. And so what I would tell you is that you've got to understand how to finesse that. You have to speak the educational language. I admittedly came in super strong, and from a very proactive standpoint, I assumed that people were going to take orders and directives like they did when I was in the Secret Service. You get an order, you do it. You don't ask questions, you do what you're told. Not the same in K-12. Love you guys to death, but damn, y'all are hard to deal with sometimes, you know. But I would, you know, I miss being on a campus. I miss being at a school. I miss the interaction with the teachers and the kids and the coaches and even some of the parents is much of a pain in the butt.
Dude, I like seeing you.
When you were in it, yeah.
You were in it.
Yeah,
it was fun. The other piece of it is that you also didn't have a life, right?
Yeah,
and
I did.
That was your...
But that's the way that it should be, though. You know,
agreed.
I mean, I come from a background where you're on call 24/7. You know, a lot of these guys, they get these jobs, they get these titles, and then, I'm sorry, I'm off after 5. Well, I'm sorry, a kid that's wanting to commit suicide, it doesn't happen on your time period. It may be at 11 o'clock at night.
Need your help.
I can't tell you how many times I was out at one of our students' houses, 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and the cops are looking at me going, what are you doing here? These are our kids, man. Like, I'm the executive director of security. I need to be here because guess what? What happens here impacts what happens on our campus.
Yep.
And we need to make sure that we have our finger on the pulse, that we know what's going on with that kid. And so what I would tell you is, if you're an executive director of security or director of security for a school district, and you think that your hours are between 7 and 3 or 7 and 5, don't take the job. And if you can't commit to 24/7, being available to your staff and your students, then don't do it. You're doing them a disservice. This is the level of commitment that you have to be effective. And it will be recognized and it will increase your positive culture and climate on your campus. People want to see that you're there for them and that you care for them.
Yep.
You know, and that's how I was. And it pissed off a lot of people because they thought I had my hands in too much. But listen, you don't just get a little bit of Mike Matranga. Yep. You get all of me, you know, and you know, it was hard for people.
It was hard for people, but the accolades went with it, right? I mean, the change happened. The national attention that you got were based on the results of what you did. So yes, you had to break through some walls initially. But once you did, people started getting in line. It took you some time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Once they did, and the climate and culture changed, and at the end of the day, people were happy about it, right? And the people who didn't had other agendas,
yeah.
Right? And all of that comes out. And then, you know, that now that you are not in that role, and you go back and look at, you know, your former campuses, they're different.
They're absolutely right?
They're different.
It's sad.
And there's a lot of people who have vocally come out and said that they missed the day that away it was. So, but we've got to get more mental health resources. For
oh, absolutely.
Kids, right.
It's
and so let's talk about it. So say your district doesn't have it. At some point, you know, we've talked about like things of setting up like regional task force,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, different type of intelligence centers and things like that. If they can't staff and afford the state, okay, from a state level, at the campus level, at the school level, like we need,
mm-hmm.
there needs to be something else, right?
Yeah.
If Texas A&M did it, right, for every single one of their kids at 155,000, 54,000, whatever, the state can figure it out, right? They're a state school,
mm-hmm.
right, for all intents and purposes. Why can't they figure that out for K-12?
We can, and we have, mm-hmm. and it's coming.
Yes.
It is coming.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
And just so everybody knows, so obviously Mike and I are passionate about this and we see that mental health is an area that has just been an area that has been overlooked. The process is being archaic, little to no guidance, right? And that this is, there's no single other investment that we could make,
uh-huh.
in changing and preventing and potentially saving lives than in mental health, right? And so after you've been doing this so long and you bang your head against the wall for so long, at some point you have to go back and say, how do I change this? How do I make meaningful change?
Well,
and this is truly a passion project for me, and I know that it is for you too.
Yeah, it's... You know, the product that we're developing right now is going to change and revolutionize mental health in the space. It's going to provide those immediate resources that people don't have access to now.
Okay.
Obviously there's a cost, but at what I think is going to be a reasonable cost,
yeah.
You know, something that is, you know.
This is something that will change because it puts something that's affordable into the hands of everybody.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that the reason why mental health resources are just so overlooked is because it's not tangible, right? And what irritates me the most is seeing that's the greatest need. It's absolutely the greatest need. Next Benedict didn't have to die. That's the truth. And that goes back to even beyond just mental health resources. That goes back to policy on campuses. Like at Texas City ISD, we had a policy, and I never agreed with this policy. If you have a kid that's being severely bullied and they finally have enough and they fight back and they defend themselves, that kid is punished equally as their attacker. That's wrong. That is wrong. I mean, I grew up a kid in the 70s and 80s. You know, we had bullying then. Was it as bad as it is now? Probably not, because of all the social changes that we've seen. But what I'm getting at is that we handled it. Admittedly, this is a story that I don't tell people much, right? This is a story that I don't tell people much because I'm ashamed by it. I, as a ninth grade student, I was a little twerp, you know? I was a small kid, had a little mouth on me. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
I remember every day for about 2 weeks, I would go after lunch or right before lunch ended, I'd kind of roam the halls a little bit with this kid. Not getting in trouble, just kind of roaming the halls, you know, wasting time. And there was this kid minding his business. Don't know who he was. I don't know who to this day who he was. I picture his face because he scared the shit out of me. And he was older than me. I think he was a junior or maybe a senior. I was a freshman. And every day I would just, you know, we would be walking. He'd be at his locker and I would just start mouthing to him. I don't know why. I would just start mouthing to him. You know, he was different. He was obviously smart. He's probably a freaking doctor or something now. I don't know. And after about 2 weeks of me kind of just badgering him, he had enough of my shit. Mm-hmm. And he grabbed me by the collar, put my ass up against the locker, and told me that that was the last day that I was going to do that. And trust me, that was the last day that I ever did that. And so what I'm getting at, and I'm not promoting violence.
No, but it is, no matter what, it is a coming of age to story. And part of this forms who we are. And it is, I believe that this is portion of this is a natural process that happens.
Oh yeah. Like
if that guy would not have done that, then he probably would have grown or could have possibly grown up to be somebody who just took and took and took and took from somebody mm-hmm. else. At some point he had to reach a point where he needed to figure out, I'm going to say something or I'm going to do something, but yeah. I'm not going to allow this to come back, you know, continue. The same is true with that whole age group, that middle school and high school, the forming of the personalities and the people. Do they want to be around somebody who has certain ideology or views or does something? Do they want to put up with somebody who says something? Do they want to be friends with this person because they're popular, but they treat other people the wrong way? That's where they're forming all of this, yeah. that whole social identity, right? And so I really feel that some of this is a natural process.
Yeah.
But what I feel has changed is that we don't necessarily see somebody who takes it to that point, right?
Well, we don't allow it to develop.
And part of that is the criminalization of a fight,
yeah.
right? In your situation, right? If that same thing happened today,
oh, yeah.
and a police officer saw it,
he'd have went to jail.
He would have went to jail.
And I deserved
it. Charged it, right?
Yeah.
And it changed your life. It changed his life, right? In that one interaction. Mm-hmm. And so, again, not promoting violence, but some of this needs to happen. And some of this is kid stuff, right? And so many times we see kids who today it would have been kid stuff any other time, but law enforcement has gotten involved.
Made it adult stuff.
Criminalized yeah, that, you know?
I agree. Well, let's go back to my famous or infamous interview with the Texas, was it Texas Journal? The wolf is in the hen house article.
Right.
You know, early on, it's 2018. I'm 3 months in. I'm, you know, they do this interview after multiple state testimonies about mass violence, and you know, they asked me about the criminalization of students and the school to prison pipeline. At that time, I hadn't seen it. I thought it was BS. And I actually said, I thought it was a bullshit liberal philosophy. I will tell you right now, I'm looking at you in the camera. I was wrong. I was absolutely wrong. Yep. There is a school to prison pipeline. Anybody who states that there is not one has not been in a school. And mostly they're probably going to be conservative voters who are just pandering to their party. But what I'm telling you is there is a school to prison pipeline. There is a criminalization of kids in our schools. that don't need to be criminalized, that, that we need to just let kids handle things on their own sometimes.
My first shock and awe out of all of this, and still blows me away today, and it happened decade ago. It happened a long time ago. We had a city where the water supply had been shut off, and some kids had jumped the fence, big water tower, right? Pumping facility. They got these big
turn the
wheels,
valves,
right? It's huge wheels. And so the kids go out there being kids. And I want to say there was like three of them, and they were ages like 10, 11, and 12, about the age that they were. And so they just went over and started turning the wheels, right?
Yeah.
Well, it shut off the water supply to the entire town. And this is post 9/11, right? And so they came and put cameras out. Once they figured out what was going on, turned the water supply back on, they needed cameras immediately. And so we were monitoring them. We noticed something happening with the cameras, and it ultimately ended up, it was a pellet gun that they were shooting at the lens of a camera. And they did some damage, again, 10, 11, and 12. So we dispatched police. They jumped the fence. Because it's such a hot topic, I actually go to the scene, right? And they end up arresting the kids because they caught them on site doing it again. But they didn't just get a slap on the wrist, tell their parents, anything else. Because they were messing with the water supply, it was considered an act of terrorism.
Whoa.
And there is no age limit on act of terrorism. And so this 10 and 11, 12-year-olds are now labeled terrorists. They cannot get on an airplane, right?
It's ridiculous.
And completely changed the course of these three boys' lives. Over
where's common sense?
I don't know.
You know,
it's not in the courtroom, all right? Because there had to have been, somebody had to present charges. There had to be someone who proceeded over it. There had to be something. It's not like any of these three kids had a record. They hadn't ever done anything else. They were kids being kids. And there are so many other ways to handle that, right? Using technology, using a chain and a lock. Why were the wheels free spinning anyways?
Yeah.
Put a chain and lock on it, right? That would have prevented this entire situation the second time. And now we have three kids who can't ever hold any type of clearance, can't hold any type of jobs. They're prohibited from being a driver of any type of commercial status. I mean, that label of being a terrorist from the federal government has just completely changed the course of their lives.
I remember in 2019, I remember meeting with my staff and telling the entire staff that my goal that year, and this was obviously after I'd simmered down a little bit, kind of got a little bit better idea of how schools were. Yeah. Is that my goal that year was to not arrest anybody, is that we would work with them. We would try to provide mental health resources, socioeconomic resources. I understand that was unrealistic, but that was our goal.
Right.
And it got us until about October, which was pretty good because, I mean, there was times where we had kids arrested first day of school, but it got us to about October. But,
that should be everybody's.
Should be everyone's goal.
Goal, yeah. Right?
Getting
a kid to jail doesn't do anybody necessarily any good. Now, having said that,
There's some kids that need to go to jail. Yeah, like thinking about, just some of the cases that we had. We had a kid that was arrested for 8 felony counts, and it was, and it was bad. It was sexual in nature, and quite frankly, he was a 17-year-old kid. He knew better. 8 felony counts, extortion, sharing sexually.
That's a whole nother extortion.
That's a whole nother
video.
Deal. He deserved that, right? The good news is that the juvenile justice system is meant to be restorative, right?
Right.
So rehabilitative. So, eventually it's all going to be off the record. But at the end of the day, and I'm not saying that some kids don't deserve to go to jail. They should. Right. Some kids should be should be institutionalized. But in most cases, it's adult intervention and trusted adults that are going to make a difference. And which is why I say, you know, it irritates me to see that the K-12 space is completely just bought in hook, line, and sinker into police being the sole solution, or, you know,
well, and then trying to involve police and school business.
Well, my argument is this, is that if police, you know, more police is the answer, then, you know, we're approaching the 25th anniversary of Columbine. If more police is the answer,
why haven't we
seen a significant change when these things happen on campuses in the last 25 years? You know, let's take, I mean, the worst one in the last, in my opinion, could be the worst one ever, is Uvalde. Mm-hmm. That's 23 years after Columbine. Why didn't police response work in that case? It's because they're not the sole solution. They are a piece of the puzzle. They are not the sole solution. They're a component of a holistic plan. The most important piece that we have is a positive culture and climate on our campuses, an empowered staff, empowering the people, training them to a higher standard, which then spills out into your entire community. Because these acts of violence don't just happen at schools. They happen at your grocery store. They happen at sporting events. And if we've got a staff that's trained a higher standard than the average citizen, then we are using them as a force multiplier at the, at, you know, the school's expense. But it's those things that are going to make a difference. It's mental health resources. It's not allowing the bullying. It's not making excuses for a kid because they have a 504 or special education plan. You know, it's taking accountability.
Rarely you and I are shocked these days.
Right? No, I'm not shocked of anything.
We've been into things. Very rarely do people surprise us.
No.
In the K-12 space. But there was one recently.
Uh-oh.
That you and I both about fell out of our chair of somebody doing something that was proactive and it was really smart. It was a principal. Obviously, she had had some years doing her position for a while. And she had some, she was in a rough area. The school was, you know, cited by, government housing projects, some very low income on one side, and then an up and coming neighborhood on the other. And, it was an elementary school, and, she had her finger on the pulse of her community.
Mm-hmm.
Because the principal had taken the proactive steps to join the Facebook groups.
That's right.
Of all of those neighborhoods and communities, had made alliances and friendships with the leasing staff of the housing projects, had identified parents who were active in those communities.
Mm-hmm.
And
engaged with them
and
formed little alliances with them.
And all of them.
Yeah.
And all of these people fed intel into her, this principal. And so, you know, a 3-day weekend came through and a whole bunch of stuff happened over the weekend.
There's a death at the apartment complex right next door.
Ultimately spilled over into her campus, right? Mm-hmm. And took place now when kids got back to school, problems with parents and everything else. She knew all the skinny, right? And it wasn't that she was, you know, involved in hearsay and slander or anything else. She just had her finger on the pulse, right? She mm-hmm. just knew what was going on within her community around that affected her environment that she was ultimately in charge with. And the way that she did it, I think, surprised both you.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't see that.
No, I was super impressed. I don't mind. I mean, I don't mind saying the client. I mean, it was Southwest ISD in right outside of San Antonio. This was an elementary school teacher.
Principal.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Elementary school principal.
And the assistant principal.
And the assistant principal was.
They were on point.
You know, and I remember in our assessment, one of the things that we identified was that proactiveness of them. And we said to the superintendent, assistant superintendent, and to the board, listen, if you take what they're doing at this campus you will be more effective than 99% of the schools in the United States.
No doubt.
You know, the proactiveness and the approach that they've put together, the plan is key.
Yep.
I don't know if they've proceeded forward with that. I don't know. But
I think that they're working on it and they're still trying to figure it out. But this was something that a principal did all on their own.
Yeah.
Right. This wasn't an idea of Texas School Safety Center. It wasn't TEA mandated. Yeah. This is what they identified. Hey, we have these things that spill over, right?
Right.
That are problems, that are potential issues right here on our campus that we need to be aware of.
Yeah.
And that proactiveness, right? I mean, and that's what we talk about all the time, right? Is being the proactive side, identifying issues before they become problems. When you see bullying, have a way for that person who's being bullied to reach out, get the resources, get involved, address it before somebody commits suicide. That's what proactivity does.
I tell you, I would like to go back and talk to her at some point. You know, the first time I saw that level of proactivity, I'm going to give a prop here, but it was at Texas City. It was she's now at Crandall ISD. She's the assistant superintendent at Crandall ISD because Texas City ISD would never promote her. Imagine that. But it's Dr. Holly Cowan. And, you know, I remember going and sitting down, having a meeting with her because I was very engaged. Probably a lot of them got angry at me because I was on their campuses literally daily. But I remember having a meeting with her and talking about how do we proactively identify students that are in crisis? And she said, well, Mike, I've already done that. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, I look at, you know, several different factors to identify kids in crisis, you know, academics, attendance, these particular types of things, all the things that we would have looked at in the first place, right?
Right.
You know, Secret Service methods, looking back at some of these things, 7 early warning detection signs. She knew it. I was impressed. And she had a list of students, not punitively, but she just kind of kept her finger on the pulse, you know, these kids.
And touch base.
Hey,
it
just
how
touch
are you
points.
Doing today?
How are you doing today? What's going on?
How was your weekend?
Kids, parents are going through a divorce. They've, you know, noticed some, you know, behavior changes, touch points every day. You know, she had about 200 kids out of almost 2,000. And, you know, you can't get them all every day. But during that week, somebody on that staff touched base with them. Hey, how are you doing? How's mom and dad? Do you need anything? You know, whatever the issue was. But something told her that something was going on with this child. And I've got to give props to Holly for that. She was fantastic. Crandall ISD got a good one.
And look, there are schools that are doing that are figuring this out and doing it. What's frustrating is that we have these agencies, these organizations that are supposed to be resources of help.
Yeah, they're taking millions of dollars that could be used to pay teacher salaries,
but we don't see things like this coming out of there, right? We don't see these types of recommendations. We don't see this thing. And I feel like the state of Texas has always been a leader in every aspect of everything. It just has. And at one point, we were a leader in education, I believe, and specifically in security and things like that. And we aren't anymore.
You know, right? Where we're ranked in as far as mental health resources, 50 out of 50 states? You know where we're ranked?
43rd.
50th. That's sad, man. That's really, really sad.